Okay, today I'm in London with James Moore, Principal Betting Investigator of the BHA. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us today, James.
Not a problem.
Now, can you just give us a brief description of what your job actually entails, please?
Basically, if we have specific betting concerns, I have to analyse the accounts that are provided to us generally anonymously at first and work out if we need more information. I work with the investigating officers that we have when we go and interview people in regards to suspicious betting. I also help out with the race monitoring and betting monitoring with the team that we have based out of High Holborn.
Okay, now you told me a little bit about your past. You've sort of come from the bookmaking side of the fence and then the punting side of the fence.
Yeah.
So give us you started off in betting shops, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, I was a punter since an early age, racing. Greyhound racing, horse racing were always my sort of interests and passions. Went to work for Ladbrokes in the mid-90s for a couple of years with a view to becoming an odds compiler. Everyone told me I was mad because betting shop managers from Glasgow didn't become odds compilers. And then 2 years later, Ladbrokes started with Ladbrokes Sport and Spreads. I came down to London, started on the Monday after Frankie's Magnificent Seven. Ladbrokes Sport and Spreads for 2 years, trading dogs and horses, then IG Index bought over Ladbrokes Sport and Spreads, and I had 7 years at IG Index.
Now there's some notable punting characters at IG Index.
Yeah, no, IG was great. I mean, Channing used to sit next to me, and we had Ernie Burns was head of racing, and a lot of the William Hill boys arrived a year or two later too, that a lot of people out there will probably know many of them. So yeah, no, it's an interesting place to work, that's for sure.
Any good Channing stories for us?
Oh God, too many to mention. No, Neil, as everyone knows from Neil's exposure on TV, right, you know, Neil's boundless enthusiasm for punting and horse racing. And yeah, no, it was always good fun. There was loads of characters in there, you know, and everyone was a punter, and yeah, no, it was all good fun.
Now, and then you went 10 years as a pro punter?
Yeah, from 2005 until I started here in early 2016. Yeah, 99% horse racing.
So what made you go from gamekeeper to poacher?
God, that's an analogy that people use, and I understand why, but I always feel it makes it sound like I was with poacher, I was involved in what was up to no good, and I was just a punter, I was a form book punter. At the time, I had some personal issues at the time. My partner at the time had cancer, so I had to take some time off, which turned into an extended sabbatical, which turned into me just going full time. So yeah, 10 years full time.
So what was your edge pro punting?
I was just I was a form judge, simple as that. I like to think I was a half decent one. Spoke to the odd person that got the odd mark for this horse or that horse. I wasn't really a layer. I'd lay a few, and then every now and again I'd lay something at threes that went off nines and one, and I'd decide that betting the big odds on wasn't for me, you know. But no, I wasn't the biggest professional punter in the world either. You know, it'd be hundreds or low thousands I'd have been playing in. Just when I tried to get the staking right, which was always, as every punter knows, is always the trouble. I'd have lots of bets and just try and get a percentage out of that, you know, turn over as much as you can and try and keep the percentage up.
So why did you stop that to do this?
It's a bizarre story. I was sitting at home one Saturday afternoon, flicking through Twitter, done my prep for the Saturday racing, and I looked through Twitter, and there was a tweet from Nick Luck. It was a retweet of a Careers for Racing job spec. Opened it up, had a look, principal betting investigator at the BHA, read through the spec and thought, oh, it's a terrible shame that, you know, the BHA being so nepotistic, and, you know, they'll give it to, someone's probably been pre-selected for that, it'll be somebody's son that gets the job, when really it should be someone, me or someone like me, that should be doing that job. I went back about 3 hours later, a gap in the racing, had another look at it and thought, such a terrible shame that we all know about the BHA. The BHA would never give it to someone like me with my background. And another 3 years later, I went back and looked at it, and it was an online application, and I had an old CV lying around that just had to be updated for another couple of years of professional punting. I'd been offered a job in Hong Kong years before, and I'd knocked up this sort of one-page CV and decided to put an application in. Sent it off, and then thought, well, that was probably a waste of half an hour of my life, and got a phone call about 2 weeks later asking me if I was interested. At the time when I sent it in, I wasn't particularly looking for a job. I mean, obviously, as the years have gone on, it's harder to get on and harder to make the amounts of money that, you know, used to be able to be made, but I was still getting a wage out of it. When I got the phone call asking me was I actually interested and would I come for an interview, it made me properly think, would I like to do it? After best part of 30 years of punting practically non-stop, a change, but staying within the industry, seemed like a nice idea. So came in, got interviewed by some of the guys that I work with, realised that my preconceptions about the BHA probably weren't right. Came back, had another meeting with, it was Adam Brickell, who was the director at the time, had a good chat to Adam about where the institution wanted to go and how they wanted to do it, and it seemed they thought that I had something to offer in that respect, and yeah, just decided a career change, but staying within the industry that I'd been working in for 25 years by that point sounded good. So I came along, gave it a try, wasn't sure if I would like it, not, wasn't exactly sure what would be involved, but no, pretty soon I realised that I was reasonably well suited to it, and it's a good place to work.
Okay, so you've been here for 3 years now.
Yeah.
How big is your team?
The race monitoring team, we've got investigating officers and stable investigators and stuff out in the field, but the actual race monitoring team is, there's six or seven of us who are involved in that. The idea being that we have full coverage pretty much every meeting, every day. We've got two full-time racing and betting monitors. We've got another five people who sort of dip in and out as required. But every meeting, every day is covered by someone.
Okay, so would you be following up on complaints from the members of the public, or would you generally be spotting your own? How does it work?
It's above everything. Basically, anyone that comes forward, I mean, I've got people come forward on Twitter and message me about things that they don't like the look of. We've got the race straight line that people can make anonymous reports or can leave their details if they want. We will be watching every race every day. We've got direct communication with the stewards every day. We're monitoring the markets, not just the fixed odds shows, but we've got a live platform that we can see basically every bet with a unit stake of £100 or more on Betfair. We have an equivalent for BetDAC, and we have, you know, communication regularly with exchanges and fixed odds bookmakers. Basically, anyone that's got a concern, there's a route to come to us. They either can email integrity at British Horse Racing, they can use the race straight line, they can come directly to us. You know, there's no reason for anyone to have a concern and not think that it can be attended to.
I think the general consensus of opinion is that the betting exchanges have facilitated a lot more for any...
Obviously, I mean, in days of yore, if you knew a horse wasn't busy, you had to go and find yourself a friendly bookmaker and say, take a few quid out of this for me. Obviously now there's a facility that if people have got that sort of information, they can just go and do it themselves. Back in the mid-2000s, you know, it was rife. There was no great audit trail there. There was lots of cases happened at that time that I'm sure great concern to everyone. It's different now. The exchanges are more sophisticated, we're more sophisticated. Tracking of, you know, where bets come from and who's placed them, you know, it's so much more advanced now that people still do it. I'm not claiming for a second that we catch everyone that's laid something they've been told wasn't busy on that day, but if people are going to try and organise, you know, to take money by nefarious means, there's ways and means for us to catch them, and I think we're relatively good at following them up.
Yeah, I was going to say, do the exchanges cooperate with you?
Exchanges are fantastic. All of the exchanges, we have a good relationship. Obviously, Betfair was first and biggest, and probably in terms of integrity, they've had the longest run at it. But everyone's good. Even the new starts, we've got a good relationship, and they're putting systems in place and coming to us with concerns. It's in everyone's best interest. People think that because exchanges make money from commission, that they wouldn't want to find who's cheating. It's not in their interest to stop someone betting if they're making commission from them. It totally misses the point, and it certainly misses the way that the exchanges operate. They understand that their business model is based, like everyone else, it's based around people having confidence in the integrity of the markets. I mean, if you take Betfair, for example, their integrity team are totally removed from the commercial side of the business. They are doing the same as us. They're trying to identify problems. They're trying to identify worries. They're not there to protect people because, you know, an account manager wants, you know, is making money from this person. Absolutely not. I was actually, one of the things that when I took the job on, I was quite surprised about. I actually thought, why would the exchanges give people up? Why would they come to the BHA with concerns when they're making money out of it? But the integrity functions at these companies are totally removed from the commercial functions, which is ideal.
Now, we'll talk about the all-weather later on, but one of the things that's levelled by some people is that if a trainer lands a gambler at Royal Ascot in a handicap with a horse with three duck eggs, he's very shrewd and it was a magnificent training performance. If a trainer does it at Wolverhampton in the 9:15 on a Saturday night, he's a crook. Now, are there untouchable people? Obviously not going to be untouchable. Are there people, is there a hierarchy of some?
Absolutely not. I've had people say this to me before. Oh yeah, but we all know what so-and-so gets up to and so-and-so gets up to, and they're untouchable and you're not allowed to go. The idea that I would find someone up to no good and someone would have a word in my ear and tell me not to pursue it is, well, it's insulting. And secondly, it would result in me handing my notice in. You know, we're a dedicated little team. Obviously we'd love more resource and all the rest of it, but we're getting there, you know, with the executive we have now. You know, in the 3 years I've been here, the team's effectively doubled and we're getting better organised, and those in positions of power understand, you know, that integrity has to go hand in hand with all the other aspects of running horse racing, and they're as committed to it as we are. So there's no such thing as someone who's untouchable. There's no one we don't look at. We obviously, if you're going to pursue someone, or if you have suspicions about someone, you need evidence to go and do it. But there's no question that anyone is off limits. Absolutely not.
And there's a very fine line between, you know, the getting one ready for a race to its peak fitness and
as long as the horse has been running on its merits in its previous races. Now, if you get one ready for a big handicap in the spring over hurdles that's going to be run on good ground, and you give them three prep races pre, you know, around Christmas time when the going's heavy, and he doesn't perform to his best, well, it's in the form book. Punters should be able to spot that he's a good ground horse. The only option that the corrections have then is either leave him in his box, which doesn't do him any good, or run him on the wrong ground. It's up to punters. It'll be in the price. Everyone will know that. It's up to punters to decide when the right day is. It's half of the game is working out. As long as that horse ran that day to the best of his merits and was presented with a timely challenge, if at all possible, then how can you criticise connections for running a horse, you know, if it needs to run? If they want the whole idea is to race horses, not just to produce them on the one specific day when everything's in place for them. Horses have to pay for themselves, you know, they have to pick up prize money. Connections have to be able to have a few quid on if they feel the time's right. But as long as it's not involving a campaign that where the horse hasn't won on its merits, or there have been questions asked.
Okay, James, we'll go straight into this one. A lot of punters would consider this to be a fact, and then the all-weather racing is at the Wild West, anything goes, you can do what you like, nothing's ever going to happen to you.
I sincerely hope that's not the case. If that is the case, then we're all wasting our time upstairs. Obviously, when we look at a day's racing, there are going to be races or meetings that we think are a bigger integrity threat than others, and we devote the resource to that. Obviously, when you're talking about amounts of prize money involved, it's much more likely that someone could potentially be persuaded to hook a race up if the prize money's $3,000 and if it's $300,000, and it'd be ridiculous if we didn't look at racing in that way. Is it the Wild West? Does anything go? Absolutely not. You've got stewards there watching the same as we are, the same as they are at any other meeting. Horses have to be ridden on their merits. When it comes to betting, obviously we're all over the markets for those races. We can have a market checked within minutes with the exchanges to see if there's anything untoward going on, and we do on a regular basis.
Okay, for my research for this, I was I asked a friend of mine to go through Proform and give me a printout of all the horses that were slowly away. Drifted badly and then were slowly away, and it was just ridiculous. You know, you went back over a few years, but there was a lot. I assume it's very difficult to prove anything is wrong, but if there is a big drift and that happens, are you looking at who's laid them? Because a lot of punters seem to think that just goes on and nothing happens.
Absolutely, we're looking at who's laid them. Now, I mentioned earlier the platform that we have, the bet monitor that we have with Betfair, that we can see every bet of unit stake 100 quid or more. That all comes through anonymously to us. Obviously, we don't get names and addresses and that kind of stuff. So it comes through pre-race as a series of X's. We can have an idea if the bets are coming from the same account. After the race is settled, they all come up with a bet monitor number, 6 or 7 digit number, which you can then use to discover exactly how much that particular account has played on the race. We can then click into that account. We can see its last 24 hours business. So if a horse drifts badly and I spot that one particular account has laid it for $2,000 five times, I can have a look, see what his last 24 hours business is. Now, if that account is playing race by race, laying $10,000 of the second favourite in every race, obviously it's normal operation for the business. If I had specific concerns about that yard or that particular horse, I could ask Betfair to run another check. What would be much more alarming is if I look at that guy's last 24 hours business and that's all he's done, and then I continue monitoring that account to the end of the day and he hasn't had another bet, he's just come out of nowhere and laid one horse for $10,000. I'll be straight on to Betfair, give them the bet mon number, ask them to look at the bets, ask them is it normal for the account, and if it's not, generally what will happen is I'll receive an anonymous account history, and I will go through the account history to see if there's any perceived bias towards any particular trainer, jockey, track owner, and if there is, then I would make a formal application for the person's details, and we would contact them and ask them about the nature of their bets and why they placed those specific bets.
I mean, would you be building up a database and cross-referencing this punter, that trainer, that jockey for build up a pattern over a period? Would that sort of
There are certain bet monitor accounts, anonymous accounts, that we, if something shows up and we're not entirely happy or we have some suspicions, but we've contacted the operator and the operator says no, that seems normal or we don't have any great concerns, we might follow on a daily basis the activity of that anonymous account, and you know, if a month later there's nothing else has come up, we'll stop monitoring it. If there seems to be, you know, a bias towards that yard or others, we'll revisit the operator and ask them to have another look.
Okay, so you came into this job after, you say, 30 odd years of punting.
Yeah.
Now, was the level of, in inverted commas, suspicious races higher or lower than you expected when you took the job?
Much lower. I think I'm in print from about 3 or 4 years before I started this job saying, we all know what's going on. Like most people think, we all know what's going on, and the BHA are doing nothing about it, and it's rotten to the core. And goodness, there was a time when I was petrified to have a bet on Betfair, because if it had moved a point, you know, I didn't want to have the bet because somebody obviously knew something that I didn't. Absolutely not the case. Heartily reassured by what I've seen since I've been here. It's not that nothing goes on. Of course, there are elements that are looking to corrupt the game or looking to take, you know, money by sort of nefarious actions, but it's not nearly as widespread as I thought it would be. I mean, I remember in my first week here, sitting down to have a look at Kempton, an evening meeting at Kempton one evening, and the horse drifting massively. I think it went from sort of 6 to 26 on the machine in the last 5 minutes, straight onto the bet monitor, discovered an account that had laid $25,000 of it at every price all the way out. I thought I'd got my first big fish. checked the account after the race, again clicked on the account to see what else the guy had done, and I discovered that as well as laying 25 grand out of it, he had backed it for 2,490 something pounds. He'd almost single, I don't know exactly how this particular bot worked, but it seemed to be matching a lot at exactly the price it had previously laid. And the guy won a score if the horse won, and a tenner if it got beat. And this had almost single-handedly been responsible for the drift in the horse's price. Not every big drifter is connections or friends of connections laying a horse. It's just not the case. If it was, we'd have 100 disciplinary panels every month. It's just not the case.
Yeah, you say you thought that you might have had your first big fish there. What if it actually turned out that it was somebody, you know, connected with the jockey, the trainer, the owner, laying it? What happens next?
Again, licensed persons have to comply under the rules with our investigations. Unfortunately, we're a civil organisation. We don't have police powers. We don't have the powers that the Gambling Commission have. Hopefully we can get the person, you know, to engage with us. But if someone chooses not to participate in a betting-related investigation, all we can do is exclude them, which means not being able to go racing, not being able to be a racehorse owner, that sort of, not being able to associate with licensed persons. It's not ideal. I wish we had more powers, but we don't. Our website has a list of disciplinary panel results. It also has a list of people who have been excluded by our legal officer for non-payment of fees to trainers and whatnot. It also has a list of persons who have been excluded for non-participation in betting-related inquiries. And there's nothing worse than thinking you've got to the bottom of something that's gone on and the person just refuses to engage and we can't go anywhere with it. If the inquiry involves licensed people, we can still continue the investigation. If it was to be a trainer or a jockey or an owner involved, we could still bring disciplinary charges against them, but we can't force people to turn up who are not licensed.
If you had really, really serious concerns, could things be elevated to a criminal level?
Yeah, basically that would require the Gambling Commission to become involved. They're the people who have the power. Their remit is cheat. If outcomes are being fixed, if there's cheating going on, that would be for the Gambling Commission to look at. We've got a good relationship with them. The standards of evidence that it seems that they would want, you know, before they got involved in something like that, it is quite high. But it's that's their remit.
Now, there's been a lot of talk in racing in recent months, years, about the level of prize money at the lower end of the game. Do you think you would have less to do were the prize money higher?
I don't know. Obviously, when we look at integrity threats, we appreciate, it's obvious, the lower the amount of prize money, the more prone to manipulation it might well be. Is a 6 grand race more or less likely to be corrupted than a 4 grand race? I don't know. Obviously, everyone would love loads more prize money for everyone. That might make, you know, sort of lower level potential corruption less likely. Obviously, at the lower level, it's more prevalent than at Royal Ascot and Cheltenham and whatever else, and that's taken into consideration when we sort of allocate resource. But I'm not particularly sure that specific amounts of money involved in specific races are entirely relevant, but obviously the lower the amount of money, the more we look at it.
Now, the pivotal figure in any sort of let's say corruption or whatever would be probably the jockey. Now, a lot of young jockeys would be quite vulnerable. They're trying to get on, and all of a sudden they're in the parade ring. The trainer or somebody even nastier says, "You're not winning on this today," and they're under a lot of pressure. They really want to be straight. Is there help they can get via the BHA? Can they call somebody?
Absolutely. The integrity department are represented at the jockey seminars, which happen out in the field. We try and encourage people to come forward discreetly. They can come to us. There's the integrity app, British Horse Racing. We've got the Race Straight Line where people can report things anonymously. And we do try and encourage people to come to us and trust in our discretion. You know, if anyone's exerting undue influence on them, rather than feel they've just got to do it because it's a done thing, they can come forward. And there's a new education programme I know has been worked on at the moment that hopefully, you know, when that comes to fruition and gets out there, people will realise that they're not on their own and there's a lot more help out there if they really need it.
Well, James, previously we talked about jockeys having a confidential sort of helpline. They can ring if they're being put under pressure. Now, is there like an unofficial line to the starter if near the off there's a horse on the all weather or anywhere drifted alarmingly? Does somebody go up to the pilot and whisper in their ear and say, there's a suspicious betting on this, we're watching you?
No. We'd be in communication with the track. We'd be in communication with the stewards, telling them what our concerns were. But I don't think it would be fair that every time we saw a drifter, or even under more exceptional circumstances, if we then, by putting the jockey on notice, made them do something that they wouldn't otherwise do. You know, we don't want jockeys giving horses extra hits because they think they're being watched and they have to be seen to be making an effort that they wouldn't otherwise do. If a horse is weakening, they have to ease off the horse. In some ways, might it be good to do that? Possibly. For the jockey's sake, just in case the ride might come into question and it was really nothing to do with them being involved in not running the horse on its merits, it might be nice to give the jockeys a heads up. But then it would perhaps an inordinate pressure on jockeys, you know, on a regular basis that totally innocent, a betting move totally unrelated to anything to do with them, and all of a sudden they feel that the eyes of suspicion are on them. So there's a possible yes, there's a possible no, but I don't know if it would be wise to be regularly making jockeys feel they were under extra scrutiny.
Similarly, are the stewards on course alerted to these big drifts?
We have a system called RIO, and basically what happens is whoever's responsible for monitoring that meeting that day will go through early market moves, lunchtime moves, and then the stewards always have a briefing 70 minutes before the first race. In advance of that, we will have sent down or spoken to the stewards. Say it's an online platform, we will have notified the stewards of any significant market movers or any ongoing integrity concerns that we have. So, you know, something gets backed from 33-1 to 4-1, the stewards will be aware of it. So similarly, something drifts from 33-1 from 4-1, the stewards will be notified of it. Now, if it's a horse going from a well-bred horse from a big stable going from 7-2 to 12-1 in a maiden first time out, the paddock boys have seen it, you know, it's not ready today. That's not the sort of thing we're going to pass down. But if a 7-2 favourite and a handicap, which had been 7-2 all morning, you know, suddenly at lunchtime drifts to 12-1 and there hasn't been a change in conditions, we'd highlight that and notify the stewards of it, and they would keep that in mind when watching the race, yeah.
So what would you say the best or the biggest tool in your arsenal is?
We've got a lot of joined up thinking here now. We have communications with the handicappers, we have regular communications with the stewards, we've got various tools. You know, the bet monitor's a really handy tool for us to have that we can allay a lot of concerns really quickly. And again, just the fact that the team's that bit bigger now, we can give pretty much full coverage to pretty much every meeting that happens now.
Well, what would you say is the biggest problem you face in your role?
I think there's a perception that we're not here and we don't care and nobody's watching, and punters sort of feel a bit alone. Also, as we touched on earlier, I'd like more powers. You know, it's frustrating that the powers that we have don't allow us to force people to participate in investigations when we're pretty confident that something no good has gone on. But we're a sports governing body. We're not a statutory body, so there's not a lot we can do about that.
Now, these days, it's terrestrial, it's on TV, there's people watching, there's people betting and running,
yeah.
There's, you know, there's cameras at every angle, and instant reaction is now available on social media.
Yeah.
Now, is Twitter, for the biggest example, I suppose, is that a help or a hindrance to your job?
Well, it helps when people spot. I mean, we have got someone watching every meeting every day, but, well, I might be watching three horses at the back, someone on that I know might have been watching a different horse in the race and have concerns about it. So it's nice that it's an easy way for people to get immediately in touch with me and say, did you see that? Do you have any concerns? Can you go and get it checked out? The other problem with it is quite clearly that, you know, everyone's making instant judgments on, you know, sort of one view of a race. The great thing that we've got these days, you know, the technological advances, you know, that allow stewards to have multiple views. We're not dealing anymore with an interpretation of a race being the guy from Race Form or the guy from the Sport and Life, you know, in the 1970s and their race read. We've got, you know, Sky Racing and Racing TV. They've got cameras at all sorts of angles, head on, behind, you know, side on. Everyone's seeing horses now every day, from every angle. The idea that someone could choke one and get away with it without someone noticing, without it being brought to our attention, without us seeing it, without the stewards having noticed it and done something about it, it's a silly idea.
Have you got any ex-jockeys on the payroll watching the races?
Well, lots of ex-jockeys are stewards. What we've got, our team is involved, me, you know, ex-trader, ex-punter, we've got another ex-Ladbrokes trader, we've got two former journalists, racing journalists. You know, so we've got, it's not people plucked off the street, it's people with a racing background, people with a passion for racing, people that's their hobby as well as their job. Lots of the stewards are ex-jockeys, Amy Smith, Sam Cowley, Robert Earnshaw, guys like that, you know, experienced horsemen.
Now, I wrote a thing a while back, I love the opinion that racing's never been straighter, and it got howls of derision from some sides, you know, people agreeing on the other. What's your opinion?
My opinion is, it's as straight as we can get it at the moment. I think it's definitely straighter than it used to be. It's definitely straighter than it was 15 years ago. Is it perfect? No, it's never going to be. As long as there's gambling involved, someone's always going to try and find the easy route to the easy money. Is it as bad as I thought it would be when I took this job 3 years ago? Absolutely not. It's not. Everyone's right to have concerns, but the concerns should be few and far between. We talked about campaigning horses as opposed to stopping horses. Punters have a bit of work to do to work out when the day is going to be for a horse, when it's going to be at its absolute peak. But that's not to say anyone's broken the rules and getting it there. Punters have to do a bit of work to, you know, wrong ground, there's not a race at the right trip. Trainers will tell people that I've got to run him at this trip today because there isn't a race that he's qualified for. It's down to the punter to know that conditions aren't perfect and wait for the time when it is. But I think the days when I used to panic about going on the machine for a bet and worrying that I didn't know everything that had happened, I would like to think that punters can be reassured that it's not like that anymore.
Now you say you think it's, you know, it's obviously a lot straighter than it was. Is there more that can be done, and if there is, what would you like to see racing change, and what, you know, what powers that you could have, what if you could do anything to change things and make it even tighter, what do you think would help you?
I think there's lots of good systems in place as it is. Obviously, I mentioned before, we'd like more powers to pursue when we think something's wrong, but I think that the current setup at the moment, the way we work between ourselves, with the stewards, with the handicappers, amongst our own team, you know, it's sort of no one ever actually has a day off. Everyone's always watching for something that someone else has been watching for. I think we're getting more sophisticated. Certainly since I arrived 3 years ago, it's definitely getting more sophisticated. A bit more resource would be nice. It'd be lovely to have one person per meeting per day that could actually go to the track and do the job there. We get out as often as we can. Most of the team are on track once a week, twice a week if we can manage it. There just isn't the money to have 10 racing betting monitors that are constantly out on the track. That would be great, but money's tight, I think, as everyone knows in racing, and I don't think it would be too well received if we went back and asked to double our budget just for that.
Okay, so you've got all those eagle-eyed punters at home, so do you actually welcome correspondence from them?
Absolutely. James Racing, one on Twitter, something you don't like, send me a dad. Give me a nudge, I'll follow you. Give me your concerns, I'll get it checked out. Chances are we've probably had a look at it anyway, but if we haven't, only too happy. Use RaceStraight, email integrity@BritishHorseRacing.com. You don't have to sit there feeling frustrated, thinking something wasn't right. There's absolutely a way to get it checked out. we check absolutely everything out that comes forward. Sometimes it's just someone that's got a gripe because they're back to loser. You can tell that within 5 minutes of watching the race. The jockey's given it a perfect ride. He's just got it done. But because it got beaten a short head, not winning a short head, obviously it's the jockey's fault. We go and look at them all. If there's a genuine concern there, it will get followed up. Absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, James Moore, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam.
For the latest political betting news and odds, check in with our expert William Kajani at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.